What's up, y'all? It's 10-3 time at Tennessee. How are you? I hope you're well. Hope you're doing well here on this Thursday. Thursday, I almost said December. That's a good start. February the 12th.
Let's go forward, not backwards.
I know, right? Yeah. Goodness gracious. What kind of day has this been already? February the 12th, 2026. Wes Rucker here, joined with Tom Barclay. And we got a special guest in here today because we are going to talk sports. We're going to talk a lot of basketball. Obviously, after the game against Mississippi State last night, Tennessee – rough second half there, but held on and won down the stretch. We're going to talk maybe a little baseball if we have the time. But before that, you may have heard that there is some question as to who will be Tennessee's quarterback next season in football. And that question centers in part around the ruling on an upcoming legal case. Joey Aguilar is going to court against the NCAA again on Friday, 1:30 p.m. Eastern, I believe. And we will be there on the ground. And one of the people we will have on the ground is right here, our very own investigative producer, John North, a newsman's newsman. Sir, how are you today?
Wes, honored to be here. Thank you so much. I feel a little out of my element. I can talk a little sports, but it's like, oh, I'm in the man's cave right now. I'm a little out of my element, but I'll try to do my best.
Oh, you've got a baseball background that we're going to speak
with.
That's true. At some point in the summer, we're going to talk about that.
That'd be a fun podcast.
We're absolutely going to do that. But see, that's why I led by saying the wrong month, because I was trying to disarm you a little bit into thinking, you know, hey, it's cool. Don't worry about it. Nobody's out of their depth here. But I am a little bit, I don't want to say out of my depth here, but reporter is supposed to be a reporter, right? And if you cover sports long enough, you get into legal things, you get into business things, you get into all sorts of other things. But it's not like you're an expert, obviously. We try to go to people who know more about these things when we need to. And this case is one of those things, because this has been a saga that started, I guess, well, a long time ago with O'Bannon versus NCAA years and years ago. And now it's progressed, and there's different cases surrounding NCAA, both eligibility, financial things. We know it's been a mess. And right now, last season, Tennessee lost to a quarterback, Diego Pavia at Vanderbilt, who was able to sue the NCAA, get a ruling that allowed him to play. And now Tennessee's quarterback, Joey Aguilar, is trying to do the same thing. And he was in this Pavia case.
That's right.
Now he is not in this Pavia case. He has separated from it, giving himself maybe a second pathway to maybe getting eligible, because that case is still going on. And if they win that one, that becomes a class action maybe, and he's eligible anyway. But he has gone here to Knoxville court. I don't want to call it home turf, but geographically speaking, at least, it certainly is. And he has been given a TRO, temporary restraining order, that expires after 15 days, of course. But then that gets you to the more meat and potatoes, I guess, of the injunction hearing that's going to be happening Friday. What can you tell us about that case and just what to expect from that in terms of the broad strokes at first?
So as you alluded, sort of the iceberg of change has been slowly creeping into college sports. We saw it a few years ago in federal court up in Greenville with that significant case where the Tennessee AG got involved in the case that helped out people in regards to NIL and compensation. This is kind of the logical next step. What we're going to see tomorrow in Knox County Chancery Court, which is not a court that usually takes up matters like this, but can, because it is a court of statewide influence, if you will. Unlike most courts, this is one where you could go to Davidson County, you could go to Knox County, you could go to a Chancery Court and raise this issue in the state of Tennessee, and it would be relevant and it could be heard. Most of the time, Chancery Court is where you and I get divorced, or we fight over custody, or that kind of a thing. Mates get divorced and have those kinds of fights and what have you. But other things can happen here. Big freedom of speech, First Amendment issues are sometimes heard in Chancery Court. We've had some of that. And then you've got this issue, which is a little bit different, not something that Chancellor Chris Hagerty sees every day, but is certainly qualified to consider. And that's this whole issue you mentioned, the injunction, which is where we are now. Chancellor Hagerty granted the TRO, temporary restraining order, against the NC2A about almost 2 weeks ago, saying you can't do anything to this young man in regards to JUCO and holding that against him until we have this hearing. That's what happens tomorrow, 1:30. I expect it will go all afternoon. there will be a lot of interest in it. We've seen interest from not only local media, but national media as well. We're Pool, so you can watch us and see it live. It'll go several hours, I would assume. I do not expect that we will get a decision from the bench. That would be my guess, because typically judges and chancellors want to sort of get their notes in order, get their ducks in a row, and put it down in paper, on paper, and that would probably, I would guess, mean sometime next week. But that's what we're going to see. It's high stakes, which you already alluded, Wes, because it's not just a matter of Joey Aguilar's career and what happens to him next, and does he get to play quarterback one more season at UT, and it's not just the hopes of UT fans who would like to think they've got kind of a an ace in the hole for quarterback, but this has got implications for everybody because, and we were talking off air about the JUCO rule.
And in terms of, I try to separate this because I have, you got to kind of walk and chew gum sometimes doing this. I mean, you know that. And so my personal thoughts on what this means for the future of college athletics, that's one thing. And I've said my piece on that before. I'll say it again. I don't think it's great, but I think you have to separate and talk about legally here what is purely from a legal standpoint the merits of this case. And that's what the case, I mean, you'd like to think that judges think about the consequences of things, obviously, when they're making decisions, but they're also looking at specific cases and who's right here, person X or person Y, and what is Joey Aguilar's argument insofar as you can see it to this point.
This is where probably to the common sports fan, you're like, I don't know what you're talking about, or I've never heard of this. But this is why there's a good shot that he's going to win. If you remember, I'd alluded to a couple years ago, we had the case in federal court up in Greenville that was like Tennessee and some other states taking on the NC2A. That was all about a federal piece of legislation which is extremely important in U.S. history called the Sherman Antitrust Act. And that basically says you can't shut down competition and you can't limit competition in private business. And by extension, we have gotten to where that is where we are with college athletics and the NC2A, and has it become, in the minds of many, too intrusive with its rules that are And in the popular thought, are they breaching Sherman antitrust in trying to bar athletes, even if they are in college, from making money based on their performance? This is an extension of that, if you will. And the argument that's being made, and again, because it's related to Sherman antitrust, that's why I would think there's a good shot at this, that it goes forward, that the chancellor upholds what Aguilar is trying to do. There's a state law which is not unsimilar to Sherman Antitrust, which is called the Tennessee Trade Practices Act. And what it basically says is things that are non-competitive, that inhibit competition in whatever form that is, it was written not for college athletics. It was written in the idea of business. But if it prohibits competition, it's a bad thing. And that's the legal theory that Aguilar's lawyer, Cam Norris, who is highly regarded and respected, is making. That's what he says plain and simple in the brief that's been filed. It says, Judge, this is anti-competitive for Mr. Aguilar not to be allowed to continue to play in college when the mean old NC2A wants to impose this JUCO rule and penalize him just because he played a couple years, 2 or 3 years, for a JUCO.
And that's where I get tripped up a little bit, because I understand the broad strokes of, obviously, the Sherman. I think we're all in comm law taught some of these things, right? And but how it relates specifically to college sports in this case, because I guess the NCAA stance has always been, once you enroll in college anywhere after high school, it's not a prep school, you go to a college, any kind of college, it starts the clock. And that's, those seasons count, and that's what, then your window is there. And they're essentially saying, why is that the case? Because the JUCO is not NCAA sports. And then the NCAA says, well, we've always done it this way, and it gets really confusing if we do it a different way. And I think Aguilar saying, I don't care about that.
Yeah, we're in one of those moments, literally, not to get too nerdy about it, where legally we are looking at things from a different perspective than we used to. I mean, all college fans, you know, I was in college a long time ago in the 80s, and nobody would have dreamed of paying players or letting them benefit. We knew it happened on the side. You might get a free TV, you might get use of a car. Everybody knew that was a no-no. It still happened, but it wasn't legal. But the thinking is now these young men and women that play these athletics are being shown everywhere in the world and making no money, and they should be allowed to profit off of their performance and what they do. And the argument is the JUCO rule is arbitrary and inhibits the competition and inhibits the ability of these athletes to fully explore their athletic careers, if you will.
And if you were sitting on the other side of this ledger, if you were arguing for the NCAA, hypothetically speaking, what would your argument be that, no, this does not violate the antitrust?
I can't answer that because, candidly, I don't think the NC2A has been able to come up with a good argument.
Hence the problem.
Yeah, that's a problem for them. No offense to them. I think they have sort of been used to having the ground underneath them, and the rules have changed. They have literally changed in terms of how we view what should be happening here. I mean, look where we are right now, even in the application that Aguilar's lawyer filed. He made $1 million while playing for UT. That was through payments from UT, and that was from NIL. Mm-hmm. They're saying he rightfully, if he comes back, will make $2 to $4 million. Mm-hmm. We know Nico made a bunch of green while he was here at UT, maybe not so much at UCLA.
Not as much, and I guess taxes will be different in that state as well.
That's a more expensive place to live,
yes,
California.
It is, no doubt about it. But in terms of just to be clear about this, the Charles Bediako situation, that was one of the rare opportunities I think the NCAA had an easy layup in court, because this was a case where you had someone who played NCAA sports, left, became a professional, took money as a professional, and then tried to come back and tried to say that, well, it's different because of the European model and all these other things. And it was worth hearing, but I don't think it was a good case. This one seems to be very different because Joey Aguilar is saying, I have not played X amount of NCAA seasons yet. People get X amount of NCAA seasons. I haven't gotten them. It just seems like a much more difficult case to argue for the NCAA.
Yeah, legally they are two very different and distinct. I'm going to muddy the waters here a minute and tell you, if I put on my Karnak hat, that it would not shock me, Wes, at some point in 5 or 10 years, where they might say Joey Aguilar at age 36 or somebody somewhere wants to re-enroll at UT or some other place to play ball, and they make the argument that he ought to be allowed to play. It would not shock me. That's kind of the pathway that we're going. There's one aspect that I also did want to mention that the Aguilar side makes, which is, hey, NC2A suspended the JUCO rule for 2025. So we already know that they'll allow it to happen.
Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, once precedent starts happening, legally speaking, precedent is hard to overturn. And just a couple things before we let you go here. If, let's say, obviously we're speaking hypothetically because the hearing hadn't started yet. Hypothetically speaking, they go through the hearing, and then hypothetically speaking, the judge comes out and rules in favor of Aguilar. Mm-hmm. A couple things that would not affect anything outside of this state for now, but it could maybe be adopted by other states or used as precedents there. And then as a second question, what avenues would the NCAA have to appeal that verdict if it does not go the way it wants?
So, yes, you're right. They certainly can appeal, and they even sort of hint at that in sort of poo-pooing that there's anything urgent about this. They're like, football season is months away. You all should relax. And number two, this thing could get appealed. So it's not, there's no guarantee of relief, and it would just go further into the Tennessee judicial system for an appeal. So this isn't over yet if the NC2A loses this month, which I'd say there's probably a better shot than not that they do. And everybody else is watching this. So to answer the first part of your question, you can bet, just like people were watching the House decision, which played out over several years, mm-hmm. and just like people were watching the decision that happened here in federal court up the road in Greenville, everybody is watching all of this to see what happens. And they're taking note, and there will be other Joey Aguilars that come along that are like, you should not be counting JUCO time against me. See if it happens. A chancellor said, It's an arbitrary rule that violates law.
And in terms of the last thing I'll ask you, unless of course you give such a great answer that it Doubtful. Has me to something else, Doubtful. I'll to give yourself some more credit, sir. If in that case with Charles Bediako down in Tuscaloosa, which again I cannot stress enough, very different arguments yeah. being made here. But one thing that I think, in fairness, we have to ask is in that case. That had to move from one judge to another because the judge eventually, after mysteriously not recusing himself despite all the ties to Alabama with him and his wife, and then he just issued the TRO and everyone goes, "What you've donated like six figures to this university over the years. How can you do this?" And then it moved to another judge and go on. But in this case, people will say, wait, this is in Knox County Chancery Court. There's got to be a connection this judge has to the university. There's got to be something there. Are there, insofar as you know, are there any issues there?
Nothing has come up. There's been no sort of smell in that regard that I've picked up on. That doesn't mean that if the NC2A has been investing a lot of time, they haven't tried to explore that issue. For example, I'll be candid with you. I haven't looked to see if Chancellor Hagerty has given money to UT. He went to UT. He loves UT. He's very good friends with Tim Burchett. They're best buds. Mm-hmm. I think they went to UT together. So is mm-hmm. it possible that he's given money? Is it possible he's a season ticket holder and writes one of those ridiculous checks that you have to write for the privilege of purchasing season tickets? Sorry, that's a little bit of editorial comment on my part.
No, but I get that gets to the heart of again why there's so much money involved in this and why the athletes want a cut of it.
Millions. So, but none of that has come across. If the NC2A wants to play that game, I'm sure that they will. We haven't picked up on that. Wouldn't shock me. High stakes, but you know, again. I don't think Chancellor Hagerty is like a person who owns a car dealership and hands them out to players willy-nilly. He doesn't do that kind of thing. I don't believe he's sponsored anybody for any NIL benefits or what have you. I haven't heard of that. I kind of doubt it. He is a UT fan.
Yeah, that's where I was. It's always famous last words, and we end up with eggs on our faces, but I have not gotten wind of anything that legally would present in a strict sense, like a very, very clear conflict of interest there. I can just see the NCAA grasping at some straws there because, honestly, that if the case isn't great, right, argue something else. And that's something I could see happening, but I suppose we'll see. Well, and again, I've said I think Joey Aguilar's got a pretty strong case here. I'm not sure about the future of college athletics if he wins it. So that is what it is. I'm not going to act like I didn't say that. I did. I said it and I meant it. But we will see. And legally, this remains such a fascinating, fascinating thing.
In our lifetimes, just look at how much has happened. Even just in the last 5 to 10 years, I never would have guessed it. It's you and I've talked off air. It has turned college athletics on its head and is – you know, it's like a transformer. It used to be a pleasant Chevy pickup, and now it's this monstrosity.
I'm very partial to the 70s pickups, the 70s Chevy pickups for sure. 70s Chevy pickups and 80s Ford Broncos. That's my alley. If they could make those a little more fuel efficient but still awesome, that would be heaven for me. If
that was OJ's vehicle of choice, wasn't it?
Unfortunately, Bronco? Yes, it was. It may have been like I'm going to go maybe early 90s on his, so that absolves me a little bit. I'm going to take that, but. John, thank you so much for this. I know that it's such a great resource to have. Legally, we're going to keep having issues with this stuff, so it's great to know we can get you in here to help explain some of this to some of us dum-dums. So thank you so much for being here.
Appreciate your time.
And we will take a quick break, just a couple minutes, and we'll be right back here on 10 at 3. This week, we absolutely will.
That would be a fun one, John.
That'd be a blast.
love having John in here. Love it. It's there are some.
Jim, he was at Channel 6. He did a baseball podcast, and he was like, I want to talk to you about it. Now that I know who your grandfather is, I want to talk to you about it. Mm-hmm. We never got to do it, and I always wanted to.
Yes, and we are absolutely going to do that, especially because it's the Giants. Little connection there now.
It would be fun.
Little
yeah.
connection there.
Later,
little connection
John.
There to Tennessee now. Thank you, John.
You're good. We got you exiting here.
For people who...
for about a minute left in secret time here. That was an extra secret time.
For people who don't know, his grandfather was the voice of the Giants on radio for a long time. And John is one of my favorite people in this building. And it is honestly like the second interaction we ever had, I think, was... He didn't like that I was air drumming basically at my desk one day.
I remember that.
I was listening to potential bumpers and stingers for this show, and I found one that I really liked, and I was going John Bonham all over it.
You were sitting in that desk over in the corner. The problem is right that next to really him. What it is it just that corner there. He has never liked anything in that corner. Just because it sits behind him there. There was like a copier there at one point that would drive him.
Well, I was used to having an office by myself for years, being a one-man bureau.
So,
and I was air drumming
totally
is a bad.
Get it.
Air
yeah.
drumming, not so good now. But
and he locks in often and you know, he
a newsman's
like
newsman.
He's a very, very much newsman.
A newsman's newsman with the trench coats.
One of the most respected people.
Trench coat, the Scruff McGruff trench coats. Love it.
All right, man. We got about 5 seconds left in secret time. We'll catch you back here.
Welcome back to 10 at 3, Wes Rucker. Now, just with Tom Barclay back there in
just
the back of the
lonesome,
Lord of the Streams.
Yeah.
Just a two-man wolf pack wandering through the desert. Really, really happy that we got John North in here to help explain some of this stuff, because there are so many questions about it. And I have said...
I mean, I've written up at least a few stories on how this has kind of evolved over the last year and a half, 2 years now. Because as we mentioned, there were, you know, it's not just the one case there. There's several cases that have been going through the system on, you know, trying to challenge this, that JUCO and, you know, the Sherman antitrust stuff. And it's like, it's just, it getting into the weeds of that, it really does kind of fry your brain.
Well, and again, I think that's where you have to, I think it's the responsible thing. I mean, it part of my job for years, you know, I began in this business as purely a reporter, right? Someone who was a beat writer covering Tennessee. And then you get older and you become a senior writer, and then you become a columnist. And so then you kind of enter this weird kind of phase where you're doing opinion sometimes, and you're also, but you're never straying from the facts insofar as you know them. And so you're kind of in this weird area where you, and I said this very clearly at the beginning when we had our house rules, you know, very, very beginning of all this. And I said, listen, I will always tell you the difference in what I think and what I know and whether what my opinion is on a fact versus my opinion on what that fact means.
And this is a great area for both of those, right?
Yes.
Because there is definitely, you know, a lot of facts to kind of dig into this, a lot of like the current standing of things. And as you mentioned during the conversation, it's just rapidly changing. It's like day by day. It evolves, you know. But then at the same time, I think everybody's got some strong feelings on how this is going, not just fans, people who covered it, you know, the folks in the NCAA, the colleges, everyone's got a different take on this.
Well, it's sort of like, you know, at the, let's say the late stage Roman Empire, where you got the barbarians all around the gate, right? Mm-hmm. And you got the Visigoths, you got the Vandals, you got all these barbarians just all over the place, these Germanic tribes and Celtic tribes, and they're circling you. And what you do is you try to incorporate them into the mix. You try to negotiate. You try to, but eventually they overtake you. And that's always the concern. There is the NCAA. It was, I don't love using the word cartel, But when you look strictly at the way it operated, in a lot of ways, was a cartel. Not in terms of the violence, but in terms of everything else. And
just like, because what, as y'all mentioned, what was their authority here, in the sense of that they get to make the rules, but
correct.
At the same time, there are laws out there for, you know, regulating, you know, business commerce in the United States, if you will.
Yes.
You know, how do they operate on that, knowing that that's a billion-dollar industry?
And it's
yeah.
So I don't. It's weird for me to sympathize with the NCAA, because in just about all of these cases, not all of them, just about all of them, NIL, I was from the very outset, I mean years and years ago, hey, you're going to have to pay them eventually. You might as well do it now. You might as well negotiate. You're just going to make it worse. And I was right on that one. You know, wrong sometimes, right sometimes, saw where that was going, because it wasn't hard to look at what the NCAA was doing and say, that is absolutely, if they get this thing to courts, that is an emperor with zero clothes. If they go to court, they will get slaughtered over and over again, because they have always projected strength.
Exactly.
Because they've always had the money to project strength, but they never really legally had the strength if someone was willing to kind of go in there and challenge
them.
And
that's the thing. I think, ultimately speaking, it was the challenges that came out that you could say it was undoing of a lot of these rules that, you know, kept players from being paid, you know, getting, you know, rights to the merch that's being sold with their names on it. I mean, you just kind of have to look at it like how it was before and almost laugh a little bit that, you know, it was run that way.
And I've gotten to know a lot of people who've worked at the NCAA over the years, and I always looked at it as like a, you know, forest versus the trees. There are a lot of trees that I liked. The forest, not so much. I did not like the combination of those things into one forest that I think was making a lot of bad decisions and was its own worst enemy in a lot of ways. So I don't love it. I don't want to say I don't love it, but it's unnatural for me to feel sympathy toward that, because because for so long I have been very crystal clear about, listen, I am not on the NCAA side on this one. I'm on the other one. I think if you're looking at this for what is actually fair, the other side's got an argument.
Yeah.
This is one of those instances. Now, when you start getting into eligibility, that's where I kind of dig a couple feet in and say, nope, this is different. Because
it's the compensation, that is a different can of worms altogether.
The compensation was one matter. And this is not, it's not that this is not tied to compensation, because it absolutely is, because Joey Aguilar is the quarterback for Tennessee next season. He's making more money than if he's not the quarterback at Tennessee next season. Let's be like, make no bones about that.
Mm-hmm.
Even the suit is arguing that. That's they're not denying that. And that doesn't mean that it's wrong. It doesn't mean that it's got bad intentions. My concern here is that what is fair for a small group of people in a small period of time will ultimately be very unfair to a much larger group of people going forward. That's my concern. And there is no – that's a circle and a square, and I don't know how to put them together, but you have to. Because that's what life requires us to do, is life will give us a circle and it'll give us a square like IKEA and say, put this together. And you're like, I can't. This is not, do you know what geometry is? This is not how this works. And they're like, nope, figure it out. Get something that connects them. Get an adapter. Use some super glue, duct tape, elbow grease. Make it work.
As John mentioned there, it would be a wild scenario if this ever played out, but you have a athlete coming in their late 30s wanting to play for a school.
That's
the absurdity of that would, I think, would like that would necessitate change almost immediately, honestly, if that ever played out.
I still would like to see a flat 5 seasons. I've said my idea before. I won't go into detail on it because we got other stuff to talk about today.
Sure.
But my idea is a flat 5 years of eligibility. So you get 5 seasons. When you go to college anywhere, it starts that clock. You get one free transfer. After that, you're staying where you are unless there is a coaching change or a legitimate need, or you graduate.
Yep.
And so I'm trying to marry the bad rules of the past with what I think are some bad rules now and try to make something better. But a flat 5 seasons, I think that is something that could be collectively bargained. Most kids go to college 5 years, undergrad now anyway. Mm-hmm. That also removes the possibility of, you know, redshirting someone just to preserve a year, so whatever, or not playing someone, so you know you're not. There will be times where you would hurt your team now in order to help your team in the future. This gets rid of that. It because it's not like you can tank for a better draft pick. You want to go ahead and win the games. It's college ball, mm-hmm. and so it gets rid of that, I think. And then there would be an independent medical committee, and I stress medical committee, that looks at actual, legitimate, serious, physical, psychological, mental issues, and is very reticent but will allow some red shirts for extreme situations. And that idea, it's not like it doesn't have any loopholes. It does. Nothing is perfect.
You're never going to close every loophole.
Because I you think
close the big ones.
I don't think it's ageist to say that I don't think any of us want to consistently have people in their mid to late 20s playing college sports. I don't think that has ever been the desire. Yeah,
there's plenty of fields where age does play a factor. Like, for instance, the military. There is a hard cutoff for people to join the military at a certain age.
I think it's
in the early 30s or late 20s, if I remember.
That's correct. Like, if it's starting to rain and your knee starts to hurt, mm-hmm. maybe you need to be behind a desk and not on the front line serving somewhere, you know? I mean, that's sure. just...
Because
I mean,
there's physical considerations, and I think that can easily be made the case, as you mentioned. You know, there's a genuine, like, physical health kind of concern there. When you get older, I mean...
And a concern...
You're going to be more prone to injury, easily.
And a concern to an older person hitting someone who just legally became an adult or could still technically be 17 years old. So I just don't think... anybody wants to be sitting here in a world where we are consistently seeing people 24 and 25 and older playing college sports. I've said this before, if this is Goodwill Hunting and that's the answer at the end of the equation, something's gone wrong on the way to get there. Something needs to be changed to make that not the answer. And I don't know what it is, but that can't be the answer. It can't be.
I think is it no painting with broad strokes here, right? And then yes. The same goes for NCAA's legitimacy and ability to enforce its own rules, yes. right? You can't just throw everything out there, right? They have to have some sort of regulatory oversight over college athletics.
And when you're in a bumper period, when you're in a transitional period, mm-hmm. there is no way to grandfather something in or not and to not have somebody legitimately be aggrieved. There is no solution here where everybody walks away happy. And I tend to be someone who will often side with the masses in situations like this because I think greater good has to be a consideration. It's an uncomfortable thing to say because it means that someone in the interim period is getting stiffed, right? Like that's what it means. And there's no way around that. And I'll be clear, I would not blame Charles Bediako at all if he had gotten cleared and he'd been able to play. Good for you. Go fight for your case. Yeah. I'd say the same thing for Aguilar. Mm-hmm. I'll be clear. I'm not going to mince words. I think for the betterment of college sports, that he shouldn't be playing next season. I think Pavia shouldn't have been playing this season. Kitzelman too. I'm pretty clear on this, and I say this, everyone loves the Aguilars. This is unfair to you. No, I would legitimately hate that it would be unfair to him if it were to go this way. But I don't think it's going to go that way. I think he's going to probably win this, and then we'll see where it goes from there. But I'm afraid of what this does for the future, and I'd be lying if I said I wasn't concerned about that. That's just something when I look at this, I think being fair to somebody in one case, if it leads to a lot of unfairness for a lot more people moving forward. And if you don't, I'm not going to rehash the entire argument, but I made it mm-hmm. on a previous show where I think exactly this goes if this case is won.
Yeah,
where it ends up with, I'll give you the Cliff Notes version. There'll be like some Division II and Division III 18 to 21 year olds who will no longer be able to play college sports where they would have before. And that should not be the way this ends. I'm not Darwinistic to that degree, and I wish that other people weren't. I do think there's a time and place for that. This is a should be a meritocracy, but it's a meritocracy for the best people, usually 18 to 22 years old. That's what it's the meritocracy for, not for people kind of finding another way in, which it's not fun to have to sit here and say these things. I would not
want to watch college athletics where it's 25 to 30 year olds.
It's just not the same thing.
It would be totally different.
It is inherently not the same thing. And if you sit there and tell me that that's not the end result here, I would say, on what planet are you living? True. Because that is exactly, I would say this with 80 to 85% certainty, that's where this goes. I'm never going to give you a hundo. Never, never. But 80 to 85% chance that we look in a few years down the road, but the end result's what I said it was going to be. And will I still love college sports? Yes, because I've always loved them, and I can't change. I'm too old to change in that way. We're going to talk about Rick Barnes a little bit in the next segment. Talk about sometimes, and I'm not to his age yet, but when you get to about 40, sometimes you're like, I know this is maybe I need to change this, but I'm not. Like, okay, I'll eat a little less salt. Okay, fair enough. I'll watch a little bit of the sugar. But there's other things where I'm like, I'm not going to learn how to do that app. I'm just not going to do that. I'm just not.
You concede, right?
And I'll be like, and they're like, okay, well, you can't say this, you can't say that anymore. Yeah. I'm like, okay, that's fair. I won't say that anymore. But this other thing, I'm still saying it. And if society says I can't, I disagree. But there are, it's weird because you have to pick battles on some of these things. And you go, but I just finally got start. It just recently, it really did start right around 40, just a couple years ago. And it's like, you know what? I'm okay with meeting new people, but I don't know if I need to. Like the people that I know, I'm good with. Like, I'll have kids and stuff, and those kids will have kids. We're blood related, that's fine. Yeah. But anybody else, I'm like, I'm not trying to not meet you, but if I don't, I'm okay with it. I know enough people,
They call that being set in your ways.
A little bit, right?
I think
Listen, I'm just being, hey, full disclosure here. This is a full disclosure room. From 3 to 4 Eastern, at least, Monday through Friday, this is a full disclosure room from this end. I can't control what anybody else does. I can just tell you what I think. And I can tell you that we're going to step away for just a second here, get to a break, and then come back, and we'll hear from Rick Barnes about Tennessee's maybe a little less comfortable than it could have been. 73-64 win over Mississippi State. We'll talk about that and hear from Rick Barnes himself coming right back here on 10 at 3.
All right.
I don't want to be an old man yelling at a cloud.
I mean, I'm in my 40s too now, so I get. It's not like my outlook changed overnight or anything, right? It's just you start realizing things about yourself when you're,
Well, there's enough people in here, in this building, who are older than me that I still feel like I can kind of, I don't feel like, I still have got some, and they're probably, I think they're all in better physical shape than I am, but like, they're older than me, but so it makes you feel like, okay, because there's a lot of people that are younger than me, and they start talking about things like when they're taking breaks, or they're just sitting around talking about something, it can be even something relevant. Honestly, for a story in the newsroom, and I'm like, I don't know what that means.
Who is that? And I think, honestly, it's fine. I think it's good to embrace your, you're kind of not out of touchness necessarily, but just that you've kind of exited that cycle there. That because trying to get into it at this age also is just kind of odd, to be honest.
Well, I was having this conversation the other day with producer Shelby, the lovely Shelby Wright, who does a great job when she fills in here. She's one of our digital aces here, and there's several times it happens at least once a week, if not twice a week, where I will be walking in either I come into the office at first, or I've stepped to the restroom, or I've gone from the studio over here back to the office, and I'll just be walking, and we have this wall of TVs, and I'll see somebody up there, and I'll go, Shelby, who is that? It'll be somebody singing or somebody doing something. I'm like, who is that? And she will look at me like, how do you not know who that is? And I have to say, I don't know. I used to know. Now
well,
I don't know.
You'll get her if you you talk about something that happened in the 90s.
And then she'll roll her eyes and huff and puff and then tell me who it is.
But 10 seconds.
When my kids get older, they'll be able to tell me. But right now I'm in that interim period. So it's on you, Shelby. And Justin.
And Justin, too, yes.
Welcome back to 10 at 3, Wes Rucker and Tom Barclay here on a Thursday,
just, you know,
February the
12th. Relating to being kind of older.
A little bit. Not old, just older. Just a couple guys sitting here with their cup of Joe looking out at the field.
I literally finished my afternoon cup of Joe to keep me awake.
Talk about how simpler things used to be back in a simpler time.
I used to go to bed at the same all night.
It's going to rain, I can tell you.
I can tell you too.
My left knee starts barking at me.
When a cold front's coming through, I know.
I'm like, this atmospheric pressure is changing now. I can feel it. I used to laugh at people who would say those things, and now I'm like, yep. The ankle that I've broken, yep. Mm-hmm. I can feel it right there too when it starts to change. He loves it when I do this. Speaking of old people, Tennessee basketball coach Rick Barnes' team won. He's young at heart, young, old in age, young in heart. Rick Barnes, Tennessee Volunteers, did, I don't know if I want to say hold on, that makes maybe is a little dramatic, but when you have a 23-point lead in the second half and it turns into a 5-point lead very, very briefly, at that point you are sort of having to hold on a little bit, right?
Sure.
Sort of having to hold on a little bit. And when they do that, they did it. They got it done, 73-64. Tennessee does beat Mississippi State. We're going to talk about that game and some things, but, you know, obviously there's plenty that you're going to want to hear from Rick Barnes, including how that 23-point lead turned into five, especially when the previous game against Kentucky was the second time against the Wildcats this season. A double-digit second-half lead evaporated, turned into a loss. So at least that was avoided last night, but it got a little close. And here is Tennessee coach Rick Barnes talking about it.
Concerned about blowing it or having an 18-0 lead or 18-0 run?
Yeah, that's the one thing I talked to him. I said, how do we let that happen? And again, to this team, they like they had an 18-0 run, like they were shocked. And you can't turn the ball over, give the ball to them out front. But and we had some open shots that you got to make, but you put it all together. We just went through a period where I thought we let up. And, you're always concerned. But, I mean, Chris Jan's a terrific coach. These guys aren't going to quit on him. And, they got some guys, they make some threes, and we left one of their better three-point shooters open twice. And it goes back to concentration and not getting relaxed. And but it's kind of been the story of their team. We get a lead, and we start doing those things.
Is it disappointing? Combination of you've had issues like that. Is it disappointing that they would have a let up after?
Yeah, it really is, because they're saying and we're talking about all the right things in huddle, but it's one thing coming out. But you can't, like Nate got it taken away from him, Troy got it taken away from him out there. If he doesn't understand what we're trying to do one time and it gets us discombobbled and just things like that. But still defensively, I thought Bishop really worked hard tonight on a really difficult player to guard. But we still got to get more protection at the rim out of JP and probably more him than anybody. But we still have to, we're letting guys get down the lane on us. And we fouled, I mean, came out early. I think it was, 6-1 in fouls. And we've got to come out just, again, it wasn't going to be easy. We know, I mean, they've been in a lot of games here. And so it's a good win for us and on to the next one.
I was going to ask about Hubbard. Do you feel like y'all had defensive letdowns or was it him?
No. We just, if he's going to get him, he's going to have to shoot a lot of shots. I think he took 24 shots to get 31 points. And I thought Bishop really worked hard to try to take him out. It's hard to guard a guy that, you know, they're doing a lot trying to get him. He chases it well, all those type things. But the disappointing thing is ball security, the way we turn the ball over. That's the most disappointing thing.
What does it say about Nate? It was kind of a quiet night, but for him to get some big buckets when things got tight.
Well, I thought he coming down the stretch. You know, he's banged up a little bit. I could tell he wasn't moving the way he normally moves. But at the end, when we needed him, he came through.
JP, obviously, kind of one of the first games on Saturday where he played a huge role and not played great. How did you feel like he responded?
I thought he was good. You know, again, he's talking a lot. He does a really good job doing that now, and he's getting better and better. And I thought he played with more force tonight. You know, we had a got a lot out of that side pick and roll start of the game, and he was able to make some good buckets there. But he is really doing a good job talking on defense and really trying to get out there and hit on ball screens.
What's your assessment of the rest of the front court?
Well, I think that really they should get the ball a little bit more. You know, I do think that. But they're going to have to, when they get it, they got to play quicker with it. You know, Dwayne had two turnovers, or put Jalen in a tough spot twice where he was slow getting him the ball and then tried to roll it to him, which you can't do from the top. It collapsed too easy. And they just got to play quicker.
You've talked a lot about Jacoby taking more mid-range jump shots. Do you feel like he looked for that more tonight?
I do. I think he did. And again, he went in there one time, almost got himself in trouble where he's got to pull up that, or he's got to pull it back out. He can't get stuck underneath the basket like he did.
How important was what he gave you on kind of that stretch to open the second half?
It was important. I mean, he does a lot, and he's important to us. But when he missed some shots, he stayed with it. But he had made a couple in a row, three or four in a row, and I said, "Hey, you're doing great, but man, you got to work this game," because he came down and had a little bit of a heat check, and that wasn't the time to do it.
Troy felt like had a little bit more, at least the most runs since the injury tonight. What did you like, dislike?
Well, I liked what he did when he played within himself. Both he and Maury, when they start trying to do too much, they get themselves in trouble. You know, we love Maury, but again, he went in twice, got his shot blocked. I thought Troy took an off-balance shot. And then, obviously, as a point guard, you can't lose the ball out front like he did.
Well, what is it going to take for this team to put together a 40-minute game?
Everybody getting better, everybody understand it, and it's getting smarter. You know, I think we got a team that plays hard. They want to do the right thing, but our passing's not crisp like it is. I mean, we throw some horrendous passes. We've got to get better with that, and we harp on it all the time, but those are the areas that we can definitely get better in.
That was Tennessee basketball coach Rick Barnes, who, full credit to him, it's difficult to do an interview when you've got Ahsoka Tano's lightsaber going through your head, as it was for him there. But that's a strong lightsaber to have going right through the dome like that. But he was able to overcome that down there in the spaceship in Starkville, apparently, and bring us that. It was like I don't know
what that reminds me.
It's like an AI Barnes interview.
I said it was like Matrix X.
Yeah, it's like put Rick Barnes in a spaceship. Someone asked. ChatGPT? Will you put Rick in a spaceship doing an interview? That's what it looked like. But no, I think it. Listen, there's a lot that could be said, and at the end of the day, you do this long enough, you feel with pretty good conviction, pretty strong conviction that any road win in the SEC is a good win, and so, you know, this is one of those deals. At the end of the day, you want to win or you want to lose, you want to win. And so that's good that Tennessee was able to. And you know, you can say a lot about, I think it's easy to say, and not wrong to say, that there is gigantic concern with this team's ability to hold what should be fairly comfortable second half leads, very comfortable second half leads, and win games. But when, I think the flip side of that is, when you've given up a couple of games that way and it looks like it might be happening again and you do turn the screw and go back the other way and win it, I don't want to discount that. I don't want to use John North's language, I don't want to poo-poo that. I don't want to yuck the yum on that. I think that's a good thing that they were able to withstand that and come back and win. But I don't quite know how a game that's 63-40, midway through the second half, you go into what's essentially the final quarter of a game, up 23, and on the road, but in one of the quietest arenas in the league, there's not a lot of noise, there's not a lot of people. It's Starkville on a midweek, late night game where they're not very good, so that means there's not going to be a lot of people there, and there weren't. And maybe they just let the foot off the gas a little bit, and Josh Hubbard, the way he can score, what did he get, 31 last night? I mean, I've always loved watching him play. You always wish he could play on a better team. He might not have as much freedom playing on a better team, but so it's one of those things that maybe if he played for a different team, he wouldn't be having as many 30-point games, but still it's fun to watch that kid shoot the basketball. And what was he, I think 13 of 24 from the field, 4 of 9 from 3. You know, Tennessee did what it needed to do And it was good to see Nate Amendt, who clearly was not feeling great physically. Something was – I don't think it's a big issue, but something – he got up slow a couple times even in the first half, and he was clearly physically not feeling great. And he had been having a quiet game. But then, boom, 8 or 9 points late in that game. Tennessee needed it. He said, give me the ball, and he went and scored. And you might say, hey, that's at Mississippi State. It's not a big deal. I would say, did you see how hard he was himself after not making that shot against Kentucky up there over the weekend? For him to have the toughness to go back in there and want the ball when he's not physically great in the next game in a situation like that and want to go get the ball and score, I think that's a good sign. I think it's a really good sign, if I'm being honest. So that's the good news there. And also Bishop Boswell with maybe the play of the season there in the final minute. That was just fun to watch. You can go – it's a little tricky for us to show highlights here.
Unfortunately, the highlights are a big no-no on streaming for the internet in general.
So if you go to the social media feed, though, go to my social media feed, and you can find video of that there.
Sure.
And just an unbelievable play that he made late in that game. But there's some concerns here that I've got. I don't have a great answer for it, but there's – we see it again where Jacoby Gillespie will spend 30 to 35 minutes of a game being one of the best, if not the best, players on the floor. I mean, you know, good friend of the program, Evan Mikow, does an absolutely great job doing a lot of college basketball analytics stuff, said that there might only be 3-point guards in the country who are statistically better total on both ends of the floor than Jacoby Gillespie is. He is absolutely a top four, top five guard in college basketball. And for most of games, you can see it. But late in games, some of the missed shots, some of the turnovers, some of the decisions, something's going on there between the ears, and I don't know what it is. I have no other explanation at this point. I don't know of anything physically wrong with him. I don't think he's tired. He's in really good shape. Something, he's either overthinking or teams know how to pressure him in those spots, and something's going wrong. Like, I think it's easy to say, oh, someone just doesn't get it done when it matters. Okay, maybe. But there's usually a reason for that. I don't think this is a mentally weak athlete. I don't think that's the issue. There's something going on late in games that it's got to be some sort of a confidence issue. Something's going on. That's got to change. And again, you say, why are you picking on this kid? No, I'm not. You are the point guard. He's the point guard. That's, even if he's not naturally a pure point guard, he's the point guard on this team. He is making very good money to be playing at Tennessee. And I hate to say that, but that does change the conversation. This is an East Tennessee kid, wanted to play for the Vols, make a couple stops, finally made it happen. Great player, All-America caliber player. But going, it's almost March, guys. It's almost March. And late in games, if you don't feel like you're getting consistent, reliable, steady hand on the ship late in these games, you're going to have a hard time going very far in March. And that's, again, maybe Amen can just put on a cape and be Superman and take this thing a long way. Talent-wise, he could. And there's other pieces on this team. I love what some of these other guys are doing. Akpar looks like he's getting healthier too, which is good. Couple of rough games in a row for Jalen Carey. They need to get him to push through the wall. Estrella bounced back nice last night, I thought. I still can see potentially something very good for this team. That's got to be better. And you look at the numbers before we get out of here. 18 points last night, 7 of 19 shooting, 2 of 8 from 3, 5 assists, 4 rebounds. Only one turnover, good number there, but it came late. He had no turnovers until that one late. Got lucky not to have another one. A couple decisions that maybe weren't great. They just need a little bit more there late in games. And if they can get that, then I think it'll be a much different team, because if the first 30 minutes of games, 35 minutes, dude's awesome. So, you know, figure it out, whatever you got to do. Give him confidence, pat him on the back, or yell at him. I don't know, whichever way it takes. Try both, figure out one that works, because he's a heck of a player, and if he could be himself down the stretch, things will be really good for this basketball team, I think. Thank you to John North for joining us today. Thank you to Tom, as always, for hitting buttons. And tomorrow, we'll be live while the hearing is still going on. So
yeah,
we'll be kind of putting an airplane together in the air.
We'll hope. There may be a situation where it doesn't work out, but we'll cross our fingers.
Baseball starts tomorrow, too. And we got a lot of basketball to talk to with Kelly Harper's return to Knoxville. That's tonight. So, again, tomorrow we're going to cram as much as we can into 1 hour like we did today. But right now we're going to get out of here. Thank you all for watching. We'll see you in 23 hours.